Hi, this is Wayne Moss. Join me this morning as I go off with Peter Robnin on WXNA LP 101.5 FM Nashville.
Good morning. Peter Robnin here with you. Glad you joined us right here at WXNA. And I know some of you are out there strewn around the world like so much flotsam or jetsam. I'm not sure which. Far and wide. Well, okay, I didn't mean to say you were wide, but, you know, it takes one to know one. Anyway, we have Wayne Moss here. I'm not going to waste any more of your time with this. I actually don't think we'll be able to fit all he has to say in one show. So we may be looking at a part one here, but I don't know that. We won't know until we're done with the interview. At the end of the hour, we'll see if we can, I don't know. If we need to prevail upon him to come back next week, but we'll see. I just can't imagine getting all this done right here, right now, today, in 1 hour. But this guy is that amazing. That's the point. Wayne Moss, the guest, WXNA, Peter Robnin going off. That and the fact that our guest today played the amazing guitar licks on this record. That's all you need to know.
Undertaker sighs, the lonesome organ grinder cries, the silver saxophones say I should refuse you. The cracked bells and washed out horns blow into my face with scorn, but it's not that way, I wasn't born to lose you. I want you, I want you, I want you so bad. Honey, I want you. Drunken politician leaps upon the street where mothers weep, and the saviors who are fast asleep, they wait for you. And I wait for them to interrupt me drinking from my broken cup and ask me to open up the gate for you. I want you, I want you, yes, I want you so bad. Honey, I want you. Fathers, they've gone down. True love, they've been without it. But all their daughters put me down, 'cause I don't think about it. Well, I return to the Queen of Spades and talk with my chambermaid. She knows that she's not afraid to look at her. She is good to me, and there's nothing she doesn't see. She knows where I'd like to be, but it doesn't matter. I want you, I want you, yes, I want you so bad. Honey, I want you. Now your dancing child with his Chinese suit, he spoke to me, I took his flute. No, I wasn't that cute to him, was I? But I did it because he lied, and because he took you for a ride, 'cause time is on his side, and because I want you, I want you, yes, I want you so bad. Honey, I want you.
Once again, good morning if you're joining us. This is Peter Robnin going off with you until 11 a.m. right here on WXNA LP 101.5 Nashville and online at WXNAFM.org. Well, today is a big day for me. I don't get excited too often about the various interviews. I love doing them, but it's not every day you get to meet and talk to and find out about Wayne Moss. Welcome.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
Well, I tell you, I'm a super fan, and yet I don't know enough And that's why I'm here, is to ask questions. So I do know that you grew up in West Virginia and that your mom had a lot to do with how you ambled your way to Nashville and finally infused yourself into the scene here.
That's true. My mother was kind of a stage mom, and I'm living in the house that she lived in when she came to Nashville prior to me. But she suggested that I come to Nashville and audition with Chet Atkins. She set up an interview, and he said he'd listen to me play a little bit, and I played some of his stuff. And my mother said, "Isn't he amazing?" And Chet said, "No, he's average." So she said, "Well, what do you think he should do? He music's all he knows." And he says, "Lady, I don't know. He looks like he'd make a good plumber. I got to go." So I went back to West Virginia and woodshedded a couple more years and came down to Nashville and was pretty determined to break into the music business. And
why do you suppose? I mean, what about when you were a kid, at what age did this bug sort of hit Little Wayne, where he kept hearing these records? What records?
Well, I was hearing Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs when I was 8, 9, and I had a banjo playing buddy, and he wanted me to be Lester Flatt, and he wanted to be Earl, so.
Hot corn, cold corn, bring along a Dame John. Hot corn, cold corn, bring along a Dame John. Hot corn, cold corn, bring along a Dame John. Farewell, Uncle Bill, see you in the morning. Yes, sir. Well, it's upstairs, downstairs, out in the kitchen. Upstairs, downstairs, out in the kitchen. Upstairs, downstairs, out in the kitchen. See Uncle Bill just a rarin' and a pitchin'. Yes, sir.
Hot corn, cold corn, bring along a Dame John. Hot corn, cold corn, bring along a Dame John. Hot corn, cold corn, bring along a Dame John. Farewell, Uncle Bill, see you in the morning. Yes, sir. Hot corn, cold corn, bring along a Dame John. Farewell, Uncle Bill, see you in the morning. Yes,
listen to those records, and later on in life I listened to WLAC a lot and got pretty fond of rock and roll. And so when I came to Nashville, I had a lot of Chuck Berry thoughts in my mind, and started doing some sessions here, and it wasn't the typical 16th Avenue type guitar playing that I was putting on records, and I kind of caught on. And
when you say later on, that would have been a little later on in terms of, because 60, 61, I'm guessing that you pretty much had to adhere to the system, so to speak.
Yeah, I came to Nashville in 59, and of course, I'm jumping around as far as the chronological events, but I started my studio in my garage and opened it for business in 1961. I got here in 59, so 2 years later, I was doing what I told Mom I wanted to do, which was come to Nashville.
And she up and left West Virginia with her son in tow, got herself a house, and set you up as... I see in your face, I wish people could see this, but you lose all the years in between when you talk about this. It's the boy is still here in the room, same kid.
Yes, that's true. She had a plan. She wrote letters to just about everybody, the president of Dot Records. She knocked on his door one day and said, "You got to hear my kid." She also wrote a letter to Lawrence Welk and said, my son can play more guitar than the guy you have on there." You know, a lot of those things didn't pan out, but some of them did. And the Chet thing, Chet ended up cutting four of my songs and hiring me for everybody from George Beverly Shea to George Hamilton IV on RCA. So he said one day, I told him about the plumber thing. He said, "I didn't say that." And I said, "Yes, you did."
Well, I read somewhere where you're on VACATION.
Put away the books, we're out of school. The weather's warm, but we'll play it cool. We're on vacation, having lots of fun.
I always loved that little record by Connie Francis. I'm 65 now. My older two sisters were teenagers in the late 50s and early 60s, which is my whole musical education. So I became a Dion fanatic and all the rest. But Connie, too. And Connie Francis, in those days, without too much overdubbing, if any, wasn't everything pretty well? Connie had to be there with you?
Yeah, I think she was probably cut on 3-track or something like that, and it was a whole lot different back in those days. Wasn't it earphones?
Go, go, we're gonna mash potato to a jukebox tune. I'll park your car beneath an August moon. We're on vacation till the start of the fall.
And there wasn't a lot of things that we have today where we can punch in things or overdub things. I remember cutting a session with a fella one time. It was a Christmas album, and the song was, "I saw Mommy in her nightgown. She was dancing all around, dancing with old Santa Claus." And I had to play a solo in the middle of it and hit a clinker. And I said, "Let's do it one more time." "No, we can't do that. Next song." "Oh, no." So it comes back to haunt me every year on the radio.
And I've noticed that even my heroes, be it the Beatles, who flubbed a lot of lyrics. Lennon notoriously missed lyrics. If you listen to that first album of theirs, they're singing different lines at times. Dion, and his voice cracked on so many of his solo records, they really rushed him through the studio. So as great a record as Donna the Prima Donna might be, or Sandy, man, he loses it a little bit there, and it's kind of, he learned to do it gracefully, but you could tell he only got one pass.
Yeah, that's true. There's a lot of clinkers in a lot of songs, and a lot of them really don't matter. I remember some Supremes records that are so far out of tune with the track that it didn't matter, you know. But
I mean, Angel Baby, Rosie in the originals, Rosie died just a few weeks ago, and there's a pitch problem there somewhere, but she still has a great, it's sort of a great voice, and yet there's something a little, she'd never get through The Voice on TV. And you know what, we don't need to worry about that. We are talking with Wayne Moss, a guitarist extraordinaire, and by the way, producer, engineer, studio owner. His Cinderella Studios is the longest continuously operated recording studio in Nashville. Is that correct?
That's true. It's we started in 61, and there was studios here when I got here, but they're either tourist attractions now or parking lots or something. I noticed the other day that they're tearing down Colonel Tom's house out at the corner. So
isn't that on Gallatin Road?
Yeah, Allen Gallatin Road, right up from Due West. And it's a shame. That's part of musical history. That's where he was sitting when the phone rang, and Ed Sullivan said, "We need to hire Elvis." And he says, "What does it pay?" And Colonel Tom asked him how much it was, and he said, "Well, we'll pay him $50,000. He said, "Okay, good. How much for the boy?"
We're talking with Wayne Moss on WXNA. Peter Rodman here, going off with you until 11 o'clock, and we'll be back to talk some more.
The tide rose in to the seashore to plant a kiss tenderly. You're gone, but then you keep coming back to me. And like a piece of driftwood that's been washed in by the sea, you'll soon be. Not for long.
you search for a silver lining. Behind every cloud that you see,